Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. I don't get into any kind of tinfoil hat kind of stuff. I don't get into conspiracy theories. I just keep this rooted in common sense. I talk about how to prepare for everyday challenges, everyday problems, everyday disasters, and I talk about common sense stuff. I don't get into all that crazy what if, far out, goofy thinking. That's not me. It's just not my style. Other podcasts are out there that do that. If you love that stuff, tune into some of those. But you are listening here to episode 105 of today's Survival Show. And I'm going to talk about something I have not talked about in 104 episodes previous to this. And that is apartment prepping. If you live in an apartment, you're going to love this show. If you are a prepper, if you want to get prepared and you live in an apartment and you think, I can't do some of this stuff, yes, you can. Yes, you can. I am going to talk about apartment prepping, but I'm not going to do all the talking. A member from our forum, Fraser Khan, has agreed to do an interview with me. He lives in an apartment. He is one of our neighbors up in Canada. And I got a lot of great international listeners. Thank you to all of you international listeners who tune in. Thank you very much. Fraser is going to talk about how he prepares in his apartment. He's going to talk about some pretty good stuff here. Pretty cool things, like modifying your furniture to create storage space, like working a community garden if you happen to live in an apartment. We talk a little bit about container gardening. You know, we talk about security, apartment security, and things like this. And my last show, which was crime prevention through environmental design, a lot of what I talked about also applies to apartment living as well. So if you haven't listened to episode 104 on how to prevent crime in your neighborhood, go back and listen to that. You might want to listen to that before you complete this show. But Fraser was kind enough to come on with Skype. We did a Skype-to-Skype call, and I taped it, and it's just a terrific interview. Folks, I like this to be a listener-based show. If you would like to come on the show, if you've got an area of expertise, or if you just want to disagree with me about something, you can do that. I want this to be a balanced show. I don't like to, just give my one side to everything. So that's fine. I'm a very open-minded guy. I'll bring you on. We can have a good civil discussion about anything that you want. Just send me an email, bob@todayssurvival.com. So before I get into apartment prepping, I want to knock out just a couple of announcements quickly. The Freedom Raffle. Only about 2 weeks left. September 1st or shortly after September 1st, I'm going to cut it off. But if you'd like to support gun rights, and let me tell you something, folks, a right is a right, and you have the right to own and keep and bear arms. That's protected. Your right is protected by the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, and I'm trying to raise some money to help support my show and various gun rights organizations. Most of the money is going to go to gun rights organizations. Most of it's not going to stay in-house supporting my show. As a matter of fact, if I don't benefit $1, I'm okay with that because that's not why I'm doing this. So check out, go to todayssurvival.com, click the Freedom Raffle button. It's up at the top of the page. It'll say Freedom Raffle. And check it out. I'm giving away a gun, a couple of holsters, and a knife. So good survival tools. You want to check that out. Tickets are only $10. Don't put the word raffle in the PayPal link when you send me the money. Just put in the word freedom or leave it blank. I will know what that's for. And if you want to interact with me on Twitter, you'll see a Twitter badge on the website. You'll also see a Facebook badge to go to my Facebook page. And you'll also see below every podcast post now, you will see a link where you can share my podcasts and my posts and things with people using Twitter, Facebook, Dig, all kinds of stuff. So go to that. Just click the share. And then the last thing that I want to talk about is our excellent forum. We are almost at 500 members. That's my initial goal, was to get that thing up to 500 members. We're a good group. We're a civil, well-behaved group. We talk about educational, practical things. You're going to learn a lot. Getting on there and interacting with like-minded people is huge, folks. So get on our forum. Check it out. Also go to todayssurvival.com and click the forum page, and it'll take you where you need to go. So that's it. That's all of the announcements. I don't like to make this show real commercial. Here's 15 seconds of music. And then we're going to cut to the interview with Fraser Khan from our forum and a listener on this show about apartment prepping. Here you go. Okay, folks, I have, through the magic of Skype, I have on the line with me Fraser Khan, and he is on our forum, and also he's a regular listener to the show, and, you know, you folks know from listening to me long enough, I like to make this a listener-based show. I don't like to be the one doing all the talking, and some of you out there have a lot of different expertise, and we're going to talk apartment prepping, and I'm going to ask Fraser to kind of give us what he knows and tell us how to prepare for tough times when you live in an apartment. You on the line, Fraser?
I am.
Good.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on today's survival show. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, he joins us from Canada, and I love it. You know, it's I have actually never been to your part. You're in Southern Ontario, right?
That's right.
I've never been.
Sorry?
Never been there.
I'm actually right on the border of the U.S.
Okay, so you're on the border of the U.S. close to what major city?
Closest to Buffalo, New York.
Ah, you're
Niagara
close.
Falls.
You're in the Niagara Falls area.
Yes.
Then I guess I have to say that I have been there, but I stayed on the U.S. side.
Yeah, they're sort of similar, but sort of not.
Well, good. Well, first of all, again, before we get started, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show today. So tell us about apartment prepping. I've spent quite a few years in my life in apartments. I think a lot of us can relate to that. What's one of the first things that you would suggest that somebody that lives in an apartment do to start prepping?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that you have to take into account is if your income stream stops, what
right.
are you going to do to pay for that apartment? And it's not like you can, you know, it's not like with a mortgage you can pay it off and then you don't have to worry about it anymore, aside from taxes and stuff. So it's an ongoing expense you've got to put into your emergency fund or your cash that you have saved up for if you lose your job or if something happens where you can't work.
Right.
I think it's good to have probably, I'd say, a year of your rent saved up in a bank account just so that you have the ability to reestablish yourself if something happens and you were to lose your job.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, a lot of people, when they enter into a mortgage, they enter into it with the intent that they're going to pay it off. But the reality is very few people actually do pay their mortgage off. I think it's a great position to be in. So it's really not – sounds like what you're saying is it's not much difference between living in an apartment and owning a home. If you're still paying on a mortgage, you've got to budget that in and have the emergency fund in case your income stream stops.
Yeah, in that regards, it's very much alike. There are some slightly larger differences when you're looking at being prepared and living in an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things like, for instance, storage. Unless you were renting a whole house, or, you know, I haven't met too many people who say it's one person living in a two-bedroom apartment.
Right.
Because I don't see that too often. So there's often you got to get over the storage issue. And in the end, you're not going to be able to have the same sustainability in an apartment as if you had a home.
I'm glad you bring that up. Sorry to interrupt. Tell us about the storage issue. Why do you think you won't have the same sustainability, and how do you overcome that, or how do you mitigate? How do you compromise? How do you store in an apartment?
I think as far as storage goes, you've got to be creative.
Okay.
There's a lot of things you can do that, you know, I don't really like having all kinds of, you know, gear and food lying around the house or apartment, I should say. So what I do is I kind of keep it low key. So if someone comes in, they don't see, you know, stacks of food everywhere.
Right.
Some things that you can do is just when you're shopping for furniture, look for something that affords you a lot of storage within the furniture.
Ah, good point. Give me an example of that.
One good example is my I've got an entertainment center. I'm just the kind of the shelves and everything for it. And it's got a lot of drawers and shelves and stuff that I can put stuff in to keep it out of the way and rather organized.
Okay.
And you know, there's other things that I've done to help. Like my kitchen table is a little square table in a corner. And something I've done is I've taken strips of Velcro, stitched one side of the Velcro into a cloth, kind of like a skirt, mm-hmm. going around the outside of the table, and then I used the sticky backing of the Velcro strip on the table. And what I did is I basically made a skirt around the outside of the table so that you don't see what's under it. It's still easily accessible, and it's not looking very cluttered.
Great idea. That's excellent. So the skirt's disguising what you got under the table, right?
That's right. So, you know, I actually keep a couple Rubbermaid tubs under there of some of my storage.
That's great.
No one's the wiser.
So you're getting creative. You're making creative use of space.
That's right. I think another thing you can do is to be creative is look at modifying stuff you may already have.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's little minor things you can do to increase the storage space. And, you know, when you live in an apartment, you don't own the building. So you can't, you know, go ahead and, you know, build an extra room in the, you know, off your apartment.
Right.
So a lot of times what you've got to do is be creative with what you can modify. So an example would be I'm thinking of in my entertainment center thing, I've got these glass windows on in front of some of the shelves. Mm-hmm. Thing I'm doing is taking some of the that spray frost and frosting the glass so that you don't see if I stack stuff other than books that don't look that great.
Cool.
You know, I can hide it, but it still looks like it's part of the center.
That's cool. Now, let me ask you real quick. The apartment you live in, what floor are you on?
I'm actually on the main floor, so I'm pretty lucky in that regard. It does kind of give me some obstacles.
Okay.
If you look at security-wise,
yeah,
it's a lot easier to break into a main floor apartment.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, so I've got to take that into account. And I've actually got a monitored alarm system.
Okay.
Which I know you talk a lot about.
I do,
and
yes.
It's the reason I could put it in my apartment was it's basically battery operated and stuck to the walls.
Do you mind telling the listeners what brand is it? Because I get a lot of questions about that.
It's Alarm Force up here in Canada. I'm not sure in the States, but they make it and they installed it. And actually, when I moved into this apartment, it came with me. I just had to pay them to install it.
Yeah. Alarm Force actually is one of our very large customers. It actually might be a system that we actually manufacture. Hmm. My employer, I think, probably manufactures. If it's the one I'm thinking of, because they're a big, huge account of ours, so probably it's a system that we made.
Yeah, well, it's a great system because it's, you know, it's not wired in. So, of course, I got to change batteries and stuff, but that's no big deal. They last a long time. And, you know, the one thing I had to do in order to have my landlord allow me to have it here is when I had to give him the code. Now, the particular unit, I don't remember the model number offhand, but the main unit, the keypad, has the ability to install or to program in an auxiliary number.
Right.
So what I did was I programmed in another number that I gave them. Basically, if something were to disappear in my apartment while I'm away, I could look at the units and see that it was disengaged by their number.
Nice. That's kind of
cool. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, well, and, you know, I wanted to make a quick comment. By the time people listen to this, I will have already posted episode 104, and I talk a lot about securing your home, securing your premises. In fact, by the time our interview airs, a lot of people will already know what some of my other suggestions on securing your premises. So I'm really glad you're bringing this up.
No, I think it's really important because, it's not hard to get into a main level apartment.
No.
And another thing that I really made me glad I had this system was the doors in my apartment building are the key is basically a code.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the brand that makes the lock, but it's a little keypad that you punch in the number and it unlocks the door, and then you turn the bolt and it opens. So, you know, if someone's standing beside me and they happen to be looking for my code, it's not hard to get it if you're paying attention. Unless, you know, I'd have to be pretty careless. But, I mean, if I'm coming home late like I often do, I'm a little tired, I'm not quite paying attention to what's around me. Probably not a smart idea, but, you know, it's kind of the way it is. So having the system allows me to know that, you know, someone's not going to just walk in if they get the code without being alerted to the fact that they're found out.
Yeah, be careful with that.
Yeah, I've been having to retrain myself. I'm so used to having a key. It's like, it's a little bit of a change. But,
I'm glad you brought that up about security and about a home security system. So back to what you were saying earlier, Fraser. What are you putting on your windows?
Oh, the glass on the entertainment center?
No, you were saying that you're putting something on the windows so you can't see in.
Oh, no, that was for the entertainment center. There's old glass doors.
Oh, the glass doors. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the windows in your apartment.
No, it was just a little mod that I'm thinking of doing to the entertainment center, so it still looks decent,
right?
But doesn't you know? Not everyone can see the cans in my little entertainment unit.
Yeah, well, and that's important because you know, out of sight, out of mind. It's more secure that way, anyway.
Yeah.
And if you have visitors come over, you know, something I want the listeners to understand, if you have visitors come to your home or your apartment, doesn't matter whether you live in an apartment or you live in a home, if somebody is coming over to visit you for the first time, and, for example, maybe you're just not that familiar, maybe they're coming with a friend of yours or something, I hate to say this, I don't want to sound like an alarmist or be negative, but oftentimes people will, if they're up to no good, or if they know somebody who's up to no good, when they see the contents of what's in your home, sometimes word gets out, and that's some of the biggest causes of break-ins right there.
That's very true.
You know, it's not always people that don't know you. A lot of times it's people who know you, either they're a friend of a friend, or they're an acquaintance of somebody.
That's right.
That you know.
I personally, my job is a security guard, so I see all kinds of stuff in the property I work at where, you know, someone gets in because they know someone who had the password to open the door.
There you go.
And they just, you know, it slips out in conversation, and I'm walking through the factory, and all of a sudden I'm in front of this guy who I've never seen before. He doesn't have a badge or anything, an ID card. I'm like, okay, this isn't good. So it's, you know, it's happened a couple times, and it's often, you know, people come in because they know where the stuff is that they want.
Sure. And how did they find that? How did they know where it was?
Usually through someone who works there.
Exactly. So, because either somebody told them where it was or they've been inside before.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, one other thing that I'd like to bring up with in regards to security.
Sure.
Is, you know, if you were able to have a small generator for backup power,
mm-hmm.
one obstacle you'll have to overcome, and this kind of goes along with even if you have a garden, in a community garden, in a situation where you may be relying on things, they're easily stolen in an emergency because you don't have a fenced-in backyard protecting it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you're on a second or third floor and have a balcony, put your generator on the balcony.
Yeah.
But I've got the luxury of actually having a chain link fence behind me that I could actually chain one to. Yeah, it allows me to chain, say, a generator if I was to get one outside the apartment without having to worry a whole lot about it being stolen. Mm-hmm. There's always that difficulty with living in an apartment is you don't have your own fenced in backyard. You don't have, you know, if I put a generator out there, running around the building would be kind of tough if someone was walking off with it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you've got to take into account. So I'm actually a big fan of the kind of the off the shelf power items. Like you can get those auxiliary power that are like battery packs.
Yeah.
I think one I've heard of is the Power Dome EX. That basically you can run a fan off, or you know, it's got a battery, a deep cycle battery that you can plug 120 volt units into, or other items like that, and it provides you a short term solution because you're going to have trouble with, you know, you can't make your apartment fully off grid because it's just the way apartments are designed. You just can't do
that. I mean, that's kind of unrealistic. There's because of the way they're built and the way that they're set up, you can't go completely off, but you can at least try to get somewhat off grid.
That's right. And you know what? I'm working on doing. I'm looking around trying to figure out the logistics of this, but basically just put a solar panel in the window. It won't be, you know, facing directly up, getting the best rays, but it'll be better than nothing.
True.
And hooking that up to a couple marine deep cycle batteries. And at least that way I can, if I put an inverter in that, I can, you know, plug in a fridge or in the heat of a summer, a fan, or even in the winter, like we have up here in Canada, I can plug in a heater.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. Up there where you're at, heaters, you know, heaters in the wintertime, I mean, that's, you have a power outage during the wintertime, and that's disastrous.
Yeah, that's one of the things that is one of the most common problems up here is it gets really cold, and if the power goes out, you've got no heat or anything. Now, if you're down south where you are, you know, you may have a problem with heat versus being hot versus dealing with the cold more often. So maybe you want to have a couple floor fans with one of those, you know, car booster packs that has the 120-volt outlet. So you can at least have some air moving in your apartment.
Yeah, I've actually experienced both. You know, most people know I'm from Wisconsin, so we got pretty brutal winters up there. And there were several times when I was a kid we lost power for several days. And we had the luxury because we had a home. We had a wood-burning stove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wood-burning fireplace, I guess I should say. So as long as we had wood stored, we were able to heat our home. But in an apartment, you can't do that.
No, it's one of those things where I think one thing that you've really got to look at when you're looking at prepping an apartment is I think owning land is one of those big things for pretty much anyone interested in preparedness because it expands what you can do greatly. If you want to, you can get completely off grid.
That's correct.
You know, there's even a guy, one of our politicians up here, he has a completely off grid. He's actually selling power to the grid, and he lives in Toronto. So it just goes to show you can get off grid if you want to, no matter where you live.
Right.
And,
but how are you going to do that if you're in an apartment, though?
Exactly. So I think one of the end goals should be to eventually own a home.
Exactly.
And that way you can produce some of your own food a lot easier. You can, if you want to go off grid, not everyone wants to. They may just want to have the ability to power something. You know, if something does happen, you know, not all people want to go all that far to get off grid, but if you do, you can do it. And, you know, so I think it's kind of a very important part. If you're looking at the long term as a person who is into preparedness, you need to look at, you know, the apartment may be workable right now, but if you don't have a plan to get out of that, it'll leave a lot of things that you could do impossible. You know
what
I'm saying?
Well, I do know what you're saying, and you're saying something very key, and that is the plan to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's obviously, it sounds like you have a plan.
I do.
Okay. But while you're there, let's focus again on while you're there, because I know there's going to be people that are going to be tuning into this just because of the subject of apartment preparation.
Yes.
Tell us about storing food. How are you making good use of your space for food storage?
Well, a couple things that I do to allow more room is largely just making use of the space I've got and using it efficiently.
Okay.
So what I do, for example, for water storage is I buy these 10-liter jugs of water that sit very nicely on the shelf in my closet. Mm-hmm. What I actually did to allow me to get another shelf of that, since I can't put in another shelf without violating the lease, right. I actually built a plywood frame that just sits on the shelf and allows me to stack another section of water on top.
Nice.
So,
okay.
You know, just using, I think vertical space is one of those great things that you can use in an apartment because you can add a lot more layers to your vertical space.
And that stuff you have to think about that when you're in an apartment. You have to think about making use of vertical space. And you know, people who I'll tell you right now, because I live in a home, I don't focus too much on vertical space.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and one thing you've mentioned this in the past, but having off-site storage mm-hmm. is very, very helpful. Now, mm-hmm. some people may live in apartments. Like I personally can't afford to rent a storage locker somewhere. But that doesn't mean you actually have to rent one. I actually leave a bunch of stuff in my parents' place. They're about, I'd say, 15 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
So I leave some stuff there that, you know, I may not need right away. And, you know, if something does happen, say I'm not home and, you know, something happens to my apartment, I can get some supplies that I may need from their house and come back and clean up or deal with whatever it is.
And you know what you just mentioned is kind of a common sense, low cost bug out location, and that would be your parents that you have just what 15 minutes away. You said,
yeah.
So I want to encourage listeners: if you have somebody, if you live in an apartment, you have somebody that's family or friends. This is why I'm such a big proponent, a big proponent of networking with like-minded people. Even if there's people that are near you. That you know are preparedness minded, make a connection with them.
Yeah, and you know, you touched on something that I've actually recently thought of. I've been doing a lot of thinking, trying to look outside the box. And one thing that you talk a lot about is bartering.
Bartering,
and,
yeah.
You know, if you live in an apartment and you're limited into how much space you can have, or even when it comes to maybe growing your own vegetables in the garden, maybe you don't have the ability to do that. If you network with people so that, you know, you can barter with them, say your skills or your, you know, something you may have that they need, you can greatly expand what you've got available to you.
Exactly. And, you know, I have talked a lot about it on this show, and if you listen to those shows I did when I was on James Talmadge Stevens' Dr. Prepper show, I even talked about it. And still, people don't believe that it can be done. And I remember your posts on the forum about bartering for the guitar. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. That was actually – I had just listened to your – I think it was the first show you did on bartering. And it's like, well, this is a great idea. And what I did was I had a need for a guitar because I've been playing for a while, and I actually went to my parents' place to get mine, and it was gone. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know where it went. Kind of found out in the long run, but the long story short is the guitar was gone, so I had to get a new one. And okay. I didn't really want to spend the money. I got the money for the guitar that disappeared, but the thing was, I was thinking this could be used much better in my emergency fund. So what I did was I went to my friend who owns the music store that I often get equipment for my church and stuff where I do a lot of the sound work. And I just, you know, took that step and asked him if he'd be interested in working out a trade. And pretty much what I did, you know, I don't have very many, I guess, recognized skills. I am looking at going back to college, but that's another story.
Okay.
I did have some expertise, and I did know that he is on a bit of a disadvantage to the other stores in that he doesn't have any presence on the social networks like Facebook or Twitter. So what I proposed to him was, you know, I got a pretty good handle on this stuff, and I can actually run a Facebook page and a Twitter account and stuff like that for you. And we worked out that I'd do it for a year, and then we'd reevaluate and see, you know, if he's getting any thing from it, and you know, if he's not, you know, I could just let it go. Or if he is, we could work out, say, another trade for another piece of gear I might need or something like that.
Right.
Just to, you know, and because he's an older gentleman, he's not really interested in any of that, but he knows that in our area, a lot of the other music stores have that presence. So I've learned a skill that, you know, a lot of people don't think, you know, well, they may be saying, you know, I don't have any skills. You know what? You're good at something.
Everybody's good at something, and it's interesting you bring up the social media, because I want to tell the listeners right now, I'll be enlisting Fraser's help to help me revamp the Facebook page and maybe even my Twitter account and some other stuff.
Yeah. So it's a big thing. You know, a lot of people, I was there. I didn't think I had any skills that were useful for bartering, and it actually worked out quite well.
Yeah, good. And so when you live in an apartment, those types of skills even become more critical to develop, because you can't have some of the resources that you need on hand. You better know people that do.
That's right. And that's a very it's a very practical way to approach it, is, you know, you realize your limitations and find ways to overcome them. So, you may not be able to go to a store because they may be out of everything, and, you know, you may just have to, you know, rely on your network somewhat. I know that's kind of one of those things that people don't want to hear in the preparedness world, is you don't want to rely on anyone, but, you know, I don't really see anyone making it that long if they don't rely on anyone. The guy out in the woods with his bug-out bag and his AR-15.
Yeah, well, I think that's preposterous. I've said that many times.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm not a big fan of that.
No, and most common sense, most people who are into the common sense side of preparedness, like I am, they pretty much realize that if you run out into the woods with your bug out bag and your AR-15, you might last 3 or 4 days at best.
That's right. So,
you know, if you're not an experienced hunter, if you're not an experienced outdoorsman, if you don't know what you're doing, it's going to be hard for you to live off the land in a tent.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things about that is, you know, all throughout history, people may have lived in a tent for a couple months, but they all built homes.
Right.
Well, if you're living in a park in the middle of, you know, the city that's kind of densely wooded, you're not going to be able to build a house. So it's one of those things where all throughout history, people had some kind of dwelling other than a tent, with a few minor exceptions.
Yeah. And it's highly unrealistic that you're going to be able to use your firearms to take whatever you need from other people. I've seen that garbage thrown around
internet
as well. That's trash.
That's I think a very, almost like a cancer in the survival industry or in the community, that people say that, and then people look at it like, wow, I don't want anything to do with this group, because they're going to be the ones who come and take my – and that's it. I think that often leads to the Lone Ranger-type mentality. Well, I can't trust these guys. They're going to come and take my stuff.
I completely agree. As a matter of fact, if you watch the show The Colony, have you seen any of that?
No, I haven't.
You need to watch The Colony. I mean, I know some of that stuff is made for TV, but there's also some good stuff there. If you really look at what they're doing, they're working together as a team. They're using each other's skills, and there's a team of something like 5, 6, 7 people working together, and they're accomplishing a lot by pooling their resources together.
And, you know, some people look at or may get they may think they need a very huge number of people in their network to make it. Well, you need a certain, you know, a well-rounded set of skills in your network. You could have 10 people, and you could do very well.
That's it. That's right.
You know, so a lot of the things I see is people don't really think there's anyone who's interested in preparedness around them. And, you know, they may think that if they're going to make community in that regards, they're going to have couple hundred people. Well, in a lot of cases, you don't need that many. It's more looking at what you can do. And when you live in an apartment, there's more that you need to rely on. And recognizing that is the first step to making the positive changes. For example, I'm actually looking towards getting a couple skills together. Like, I'm looking at taking my ham radio course. It starts in September.
Great.
So I'll be able to provide communications in some way.
Good.
And then I'm also looking at taking a minor vehicle maintenance course, so that I can, you know, at least I can change my own tire, if nothing else. You know, if nothing goes wrong, at least I can change my own oil if I have to. you know.
Yeah, and you know, you're bringing up some great points. I hold your thoughts for a minute. I want to stop you because you just said something really good. You know, you're learning skills. You know, you're learning some vehicle maintenance skills. You're learning some ham radio skills. Those are all skills that if the stink hits the fan, you can barter those skills for supplies that maybe you can't otherwise have in your apartment, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. And,
you know, these are things that I think if you look at it from the apartment side, you can even take these outside the apartment because we've all got limitations.
Right.
Whether we have a, you know, one of those, what's that family in California, the Gervaises or something like that?
The Gervais, or Dervais. Dervais.
Dervais, right.
Dervais.
You know, they've got their own limitations. I don't see them, but everyone has them. You know, so
sure.
you could rely, you know, everyone needs something. And you can't store 100% of everything you need on your property.
Usually not.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends who you are, but
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things that kind of goes outside the realm of practical.
Yeah, probably for 90% of people that are preparing, they probably cannot store everything they need on their property. You're correct.
Yeah. So even you may be listening to this thinking, well, what am I going to take out of it? Well, you know, you can take a lot just by applying these concepts to your own life. And you know, if you may be like me, I'm pretty good with computers, but you know what, they're going to be handy and they are handy tools, but if the internet goes down, there's not much people will be doing with their computers anymore.
Well, so, there's some things you can store some good survival information on your computer, and you can back it up to CDs and external hard drives. Even if you don't have internet connection, you can still use your computer for stuff.
That is true. It is great for your preparedness library and all kinds of information.
Yeah.
The one thing I see is a lot of people are going towards computers that are largely dependent on the internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you may get a version of a operating system that if you can't get the updates, eventually it'll stop working.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
So, yeah, you want to, you know, so, you know, you can store a lot of stuff on it, but, you know, and, I mean, chances are the internet will be around, but you've got to look at tangible skills that you can use outside of your office.
Exactly. You know, like we all like your ham radio and your vehicle maintenance skills, for example.
Exactly. There's a lot of things outside of, you know, you may have one area that you're really good at. I'm really good with computers. The reason I'm looking at going to college is because I don't have the certifications and say to employers, I'm good with them. But, you know, I'm good with them. The other thing is, I lost you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay. All right, sorry.
That's okay. We lost each other before, and that's why there was a little bit of a break in the interview.
Yeah, so, that's my phone ringing, sorry. But the thing is, there's other skills you can use that can help you, whether, you know, if things go wrong or if they don't, you can easily, you know, learn a little bit of vehicle maintenance and you'll know how to change your tire.
Yeah. Or fix, you know, do some minor repairs on your vehicle.
Yeah. Or even, you know, if you know how to do some minor plumbing, you can, you know, change your own toilet if you need to, or you can use that skill to barter. You know, you don't need to be the certified plumber to barter that skill.
Exactly.
Well, I guess it depends on what level you're bartering that skill. But, you know, as long as it's something that you don't need to be a certified plumber to do, you know, you can barter with that skill today. And if things go wrong, people may not worry about the certified plumber as far as fixing their pipes. So.
Good point. Frazier, are you doing any? Are you growing any food in your apartment?
I actually have. I'm very lucky. I've got a small community garden right outside my apartment.
Oh, okay,
so
good.
I do grow some of my own food in that way. There is some great stuff like that. I've actually been looking into trying, like sprouting.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's read James Thomas Stephen's book, Making the Best of Basics, there's a whole chapter dedicated to sprouting.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something you can do even in an apartment with very little window space. You can still do some sprouting and get some fresh food on a daily basis.
He actually talked about that on one of his podcasts recently, and if you go to drprepper.com, you can download one. I think you're going to have to search through the archives, but thanks for bringing that up, because that was a great episode.
Yeah, and you know, he's even got a free ebook on his website. I think it's under freebies, the freebies tab.
Yeah, it is under the freebies tab. That's correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of information on the internet you can use, and, you know, it may not be able to, if you're not able to have that community garden within your city somewhere, I'm lucky enough to have it outside my back door. You know,
That's great. That's great.
But, you know, if you can't, there are things you can do. You can have a couple planters in your window.
That's right.
Produce something. So there is the ability to do a lot of that stuff. One of the obstacles you run into is in one of those doomsday scenarios where you have to rely on your garden, you're not going to be able to produce as much as you need. And it's also, you know, by the time you get out there, it might all be gone.
Yeah, of course. But you know, as we all know, we also have to focus on what we can do right now to save money here and there. And even if you save $15 a week, doing some container gardening in your apartment.
Yep, and that's a very important thing. I'm really big on doing what you can to save money so that you have got more room for paying off debt or preparedness and other things that may cost money, or even just building up your emergency fund.
That's music to my ears.
I've actually been listening to Dave Ramsey's for a long time too, and I really like his stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, he changed my life. I've talked about that a lot.
Yeah, he's doing great stuff. A lot of people call into his show, and you can just tell that their lives have been changed by what he's communicating it very well. I think much like you do, you communicate the practical side of prepping very well, and it makes it more appealing to people.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Frazier. Thanks for the compliment. We're starting to run out of time, but what I'd like you to do, if you don't mind, recap. But while you're recapping, what do you think, if you're talking to somebody who's in an apartment right now, let's say you've met them for the first time, and they come up to you and they say, hey, Frazier, I'm interested in prepping, in getting prepared, excuse me. What three things would you tell them to do?
I'd probably start with to make it very practical so they can see something being done right away is probably start with a small emergency kit.
Okay.
Something you can call it a bug out bag, you can call it what you want, but it's more or less a bag that allows you to have stuff you may need to make it 72 hours in an emergency.
Right.
You know, batteries, flashlights, some food if you have to.
And anybody can do that in an apartment. Anybody can do that.
Anyone can. You don't even have to have an apartment to do that.
Right.
You can easily build up enough supplies to last you 3 days, and that's probably where it'd start, just so it, you know, very quickly they get the ball rolling and see they can do it. I like that about some of those goal-setting seminars where it's like get the ball rolling, kind of like Dave Ramsey.
Right.
Talks about getting that first debt paid off.
Baby steps.
That's right. The second thing I'd probably suggest is to start for that $1,000 emergency fund.
Okay.
That way you don't have to – you talk about a lot is you don't have to go into debt. You know, not very many people can say they've got, you know, enough to pay their rent if they didn't have a paycheck. You know, at very least they can pay their rent so they don't get kicked out of their place.
Amazingly enough, I'm glad you brought that up. Amazingly enough, the statistics still remain. Less than 6% of Americans, and it's probably the same in Canada, less than 6% of the people could go 90 days without any income before they are going to be facing some type of an eviction.
Mm-hmm. And I think after the $1,000 emergency fund, I think the biggest thing that cripples people, and you talk about a lot of different preparedness shows talk about it, is paying off their debt.
Right.
Because if you can make it, like you said, the whole 90 days without any income, you're ahead of, like you said, like 94% of people.
You're ahead of 94% of the people. That's right.
So if you get that that done, you're in a better place to make the bigger preps possible, like, you know, storing up food. And you can always do this while you're going. You know, what I do is I allocate $20 every week to food storage, to other items I may need to stock up on. And what I do is I still, you know, pay down the debt, and I still, you know, go towards that financial goal, which will set you apart from the vast majority of people even in the prepping world. And you can still, along the way, save up a lot of the items and food storage and other things you may need.
Yeah, well, good. You know, what would be the third thing? So we've got an emergency kit, we got the paying off debt and the emergency fund. What would be the number three?
I think number three would then be just taking an inventory
okay.
of what you've got, because then I think this is kind of combines two things into one, but, you know, get the inventory so you know what you've got, so that you know how prepared you actually are. And then the second step of three, if that makes sense, is start going after those weak areas.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty sure you've talked about some of this stuff a lot, but, you know, it's made the most sense to me, and it's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I've heard a couple shows talk about similar stuff to this, and, you know, it makes sense, which is why I do it. If it didn't make sense, I wouldn't be too interested.
Check it with your common sense barometer.
That's right.
Exactly. Good. This is good stuff, Frazier. Thanks. I appreciate you coming on and talking about it from someone's perspective that lives in an apartment, because I think a lot of people get the idea that they have to have this huge homestead with lots and lots of acreage to prepare, and that's just not necessarily true, is it?
No, because you can be at any point in any stage of life, you can be prepared for, you know, you can be prepared on one end for the apocalyptic, you know, end of the world scenario, but at the same time, that's not very likely to happen. So while you're walking along that road, you can be prepared for what is likely to happen.
That's correct. And good. This is great. Thanks for coming on the show and doing this. And I think I got a feeling there's more we could talk about. We might have to do a part two to this.
Yeah, that would be great.
yeah.
Know, there is a lot you can get into, and it's very hard to kind of fill it into one show.
Yeah, we'll probably do a part two coming up. Thanks again. And I want to say before we close this, to anybody listening to this show, if you're new to listening to this show, you know, Frazier's on our forum, folks. Get on our forum, interact with him. We have almost 500 members on there now, and we're good people. You know, we're not gonna tease you. We're not gonna chastise you for anything. There's just some good common sense stuff being kicked around on the forum. So, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And you're welcome. And thanks for listening to the show. It sounds like you have a phone call you have to catch.
Not really.
Oh,
it's just people calling me like crazy. So I'll get to them.
Thanks. Frazier Khan, everybody. Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, I hope you got as much from that interview as I did. Frazier, thanks again for coming on the show. I always say this, if anybody else wants to come on the show, we can do a short interview, long interview, whatever you want. Just let me know, and I'll make it happen. Just send me an email, bob@todayssurvival.com, or send me a private message on the forum or something. I would like to just close with a few comments about apartment survivalism. You know, you see it all the time. You see people post in things on the internet and say things like, "Well, I live in an apartment. I can't prepare. How could I prepare for stink hit the fan events?" Or "I live in a densely populated urban neighborhood." If you live in an apartment or a dormitory or an urban neighborhood, it doesn't mean that you can't be a survivalist. It just means you have to be smarter about your preparations, or more organized, as Frazier and I talked about, or a little bit more creative. And living in areas like this, they do have unique challenges. Now, I've spent quite a bit of time in my life living in an apartment and living in a very densely populated area. And you could say here where I live in Frisco in the suburbs of Dallas, I don't live in an apartment. I live in my own home, but it's kind of densely populated around here. So there's some different nuances to what I do here when I prepare versus somebody who lives in a rural environment. Okay, and one of the issues is storage space. And Fraser and I talked a little bit about it, but I have a few things that I want to add here before I close the show. We all have problems with storage space. You know, it seems like the more we want to prepare, the less storage space that we have. And even those of us that live, you know, way out in the rural areas, even struggling, even a storage space for you folks might be a struggle. Stored fuel or stored water, stored food and things like that, they all take up a lot of space, and a lot of it is really heavy. And so it has to be stored on the floor typically, and floor space is what we call premium. It's premium space. So you have to readjust your thinking when it comes to preparation. And I'm not saying that an urban or an apartment dwelling is a permanent solution for people either. You know, Fraser and I talked about it. It might not be a permanent living situation for him. So, but in the meantime, you can find a lot of different ways to survive for weeks and weeks and weeks, even in the city. So I want to kind of recap some of what Fraser and I talked about and give you a few more ideas here before I close. Again, I'm speaking to those of you who live in the city or live in apartments, live in high-rises, live in condos and so forth. I know you're out there. I have international listeners to this show that might be living in crowded spaces. And I have a lot of people who listen to this show that have actually emailed me and said, hey, Bob, you know what? I don't have this big urban homestead. What do you think that I should do? Well, folks, I don't have a big urban homestead either. So, you know, let me share some things that I'm doing. And again, I'm speaking to those of you who live in urban areas. I would say that disaster preparedness is probably the best mindset for you to keep while you're in that situation and preparing yourself. And let me first of all start with things like unemployment. Fraser and I talked a little bit about this. Have you planned for 3 months worth of fallback income? At a minimum, I prefer 6 months. Okay, lots of people are finding themselves unemployed these days. That's no secret. And they're finding themselves unemployed for far longer than anybody expected. And the things that our government's doing is probably not going to change that. I'm really resisting the urge here, folks, to get political. So I want to keep this a politically neutral show, so I won't go there. But it doesn't seem like our government's doing much to help fix the unemployment problem, the root of the problem. So, folks, I don't care whether you live in the city or not. You should be preparing for that. Have a savings plan. That would allow you, with no outside money coming in, to pay the rent, the utilities, purchase food and stuff like that, and help you try not to vary too much from your present lifestyle and gas for your vehicle and things like that. The reasoning here is that if you find yourself unemployed, you should be able to draw unemployment, but you can add to it, and it's an insurance policy. It's an insurance policy. You don't have to be stuck living on $300 a week or whatever it is that you get paid. All right, let me talk about emergency water storage, one of the basics that all preppers should be doing. Emergency water storage can keep you very comfortable, even if it's just a moderate amount. And since being an apartment dweller, your storage space is limited, I realize that. Go out and purchase a couple of large containers, either pre-filled or ones that you can fill, and find a place you can stick them so that they're out of the way. And Fraser gave us some good ideas in the interview that we just did. And every so often you rotate them, just like everybody else. You rotate out your water storage with new ones. You just simply use the old ones and replace them with new ones. It's as simple as that. You'd be amazed, even if it's just bottled water or something like that, or even if it's 2-liter or 3-liter bottles of water, you'd be amazed if you get creative with your storage space how much of that you can stock up. Okay, spare blankets and sheets in the closet. Let's talk about that for a minute. That can go a long way toward helping you in the event of a winter adversity. And folks, even though it's the middle of summer, winter's not too far away. And, you know, Fraser and I talked about that. He's from Canada. For those of you who live in the colder climates, be thinking about that. No power equals no heat, because even if you have gas, your thermostat probably is electric. Okay, a camping stove in an apartment, it's not too hard to store. That can make life a lot easier in the event of a power outage. Especially if you're dependent on electricity, it can provide a lot of hot meals for you. A way to cook. All right, and think about it, your camping stove also gives you a little bit of residual heat. A charcoal or a gas grill can also be huge, especially in the winter. And most people that I know in apartments, they have a place to have a charcoal or a gas grill. Now, food planning also can do a lot. And I'm kind of focusing on power outages here. That's one of the disasters I would suggest if you're in an apartment that you plan for. Having soups and stews and pastas and things like that can keep you going great. It can keep you running like a champ if things break down. Okay, and another thing is knowing how to actually prepare everyday foods, like bread and so forth, on your own. It eliminates the need for machines and heading to the grocery store. Okay, another thing I don't know if you've thought about. We didn't have a chance to talk about it, Fraser and I, because I forgot to ask him. But storing a good cooler, all right, that can help a lot. And think about it. You know, like I said, winter's coming. If it's wintertime, you got a good cooler. If the power goes out due to inclement cold weather or whatever, or a blizzard, you know, you have a safe place to. If you have a safe place to store your cooler, then you can put your frozen foods in there, and they can stay frozen in nature's freezer. Just stick your cooler out on the porch, and if it's cold, it's probably going to still stay frozen for quite a while. You probably also might want to start stocking up on candles and lanterns and oil and things like that and matches. These are amazing to have around in an apartment. Actually, anybody should be stacking up on these, but especially those of you in apartments, especially if you can't have a generator and so forth. And they help boost your morale. You know, humans crave light and they crave warmth. And morale in a disaster, your attitude, your psyche, your morale, that's huge. Cody Lundeen says it so often that survival is 90% mental, 90% attitude. And if you think about it, one of the earliest things people do in the event of a wilderness survival scenario, if you've been watching out Dual Survival with Cody and Dave lately, what do they do first? What's the first thing that they seek out? They build a fire. Even if it's in the warm weather, they still build a fire. And you know one of the reasons why they do that? They don't really explain this too much, but one of the reasons why a lot of people, even in a wilderness situation, they build a fire is because if anyone is close to panicking, there's something about fire. Fire offers a semblance of control and security. It helps calm you down enough to allow you to start thinking reasonably again. There's something psychological about having a fire or having some way to light your area, especially in the dark. So if you're in an apartment and you've got good safe candles and lanterns and matches and things like that, ways to light your dwelling, even those of you who don't live in an apartment, this is important. It's just something soothing about that. If you have a balcony on your apartment, you can grow some herbs, you can grow a few veggies, you can, you know, start some container gardens and things. It's not that difficult. Something Fraser and I talked in the interview about, but I want to start getting a little bit more in depth here on it, is having spare items on hand for your car, for your vehicle maintenance. You know, do you know how to fix certain things on your car that can save you money and save you time? That's a survival skill. Have all your finances lined up, too, if you can't fix your car and you need to pay somebody to do it. That's huge. Okay, and finally, I want to talk about community for those of you who live in apartments, condos, dormitories, and stuff like that. It might be a good idea to start gathering other like-minded people in your apartment community. For example, if there is land that's not being used in the area and plot rental that could be arranged for gardening or bulk buying from local farmers and distributing it around like-minded people and basically getting people in your apartment to pitch in and help and take advantage of bulk buying and so forth. And building that network of people that have resources and sharing the resources and talking about what you bring to the table in case there is a barter situation. But, you know, it's teamwork. It's teamwork, especially for those of you who live in apartments, who live in condominiums, who live in dormitories. If there are several of you, if there are a dozen of you in your community that are into preparation, that are into common sense preparedness, when a disaster strikes, you as a team can pool your resources together. You know, that's why I talk so much on this show about sticking together and building a community of like-minded preparedness folks. So I hope you enjoyed this interview, and I hope you enjoyed a few of the comments I wanted to share with you. And I want to thank you for listening to episode 105 on apartment survivalism. My name is Bob Main, and you have just listened to another episode of Today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to keep things practical, keep them real, keep them rooted in common sense, and share with you how to do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. So thanks for helping me strengthen your resolve, folks, and I will catch you next time. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.